You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's Mike and George. Hopefully you guys, folks got a chance to listen to that story from George in the previous hour. If not, listen to it on demand on the app. It's well worth it. George putting the adventure in Adventureland where he was yesterday with his his daughters. So you're being a good dad. No, can't criticize you for that, but it's unfortunate that you don't have the constitution that you once did, George.
I never get sick, though. That's what's so wrong. I mean, I don't drink, so I don't have to worry about that. It's You know, that's what's rare. I thought I could – actually, I shouldn't say I thought I could make it through. I knew it was about a 50-50 shot at best.
Yeah. So turn the page a little bit to some baseball because, look, on this network, we're full service. Roto Experts in the Morning, we're trying to give you a sense of what you can do. There's still, George, 7 weeks, 8 weeks left in the baseball season. I told you earlier I'm actually making a little bit of a push in my league. I'm closer to first place now than I've been basically since April. I've been middle of the pack for 3 months. I made some changes. I picked up some starting pitching in order to try to really impact my numbers. Now it could go way south, but picking up guys like Kyle Hendricks and a couple of others, I've transformed the pitching staff a little bit. Now the problem is I have Max Scherzer. So if you're Max Scherzer owner, you're obviously going to be concerned here down the stretch, but on a scale of, say, 1 to 10, how concerned are you for Scherzer the rest of the way?
I'm not. Just a little neck cramp, no big deal. Slept on it wrong. That happened. So I was immensely annoyed that he had to come out of that game. I mean, I have him in a couple of leagues, pitched one inning, only threw 10 pitches, and, you know, dominated them and hit a home run the bottom of the inning. Another reason why pitches shouldn't hit. And then, you know, it creeped up. What are you going to do? It happens. Man, that's really what it is. It happens. He's throwing a bullpen today. We'll find out today if he's going to start Monday, but all signs are that he will start.
Oh, that's good. So good news for you, Max Scherzer owners. You Darvish, George, last night was dominant. Everything that the Dodgers paid for, he displayed in his one start, and he's making them an unbelievably better team. As great as they've been, they're an even better team with you in the mix now.
Yeah, absolutely with you in the mix. I think we forget about you. He's only about a little bit more than a year off Tommy John surgery. This surgery takes time, and everything's, oh, you come back, you're warm, you'll be fine. Doesn't work that way. Guys do have to build up to it again. He goes to the National League now, and, you know, your pitchers hit weaker lineups here. I think this is all good for you. I mean, all good. I think it does them a very good job here getting him, sort of covers them in case Kershaw can't come back. McCarthy's out too, so it's good all around here. If you happen to be on your waiver wire, you're running and grabbing him right now. But assuming he's not and you held on to him, you just got a huge bonus.
Yeah, Darvish with 10 Ks last night, 7 scoreless innings against the Mets, 10 Ks, the first Dodgers pitcher to have 10 Ks in his debut since 2002. Can you name that pitcher, George?
I don't know, Alex Wood.
Kaz Ishii, 2002. Remember him?
No.
Yeah, so that's it. That's how memorable that was. So we'll see what you does for the rest of the way. We'll talk a little bit more baseball after this. It's Mike and George, Roto Experts in the Morning. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Talked a little bit about Yu Darvish before the break and how he can really, as George said, he bolsters that pitching staff in a kind of an inconceivable way, right? You have these injuries, but adding Darvish here. And that was the big shocker right out of the MLB trade deadline, I guess you could say, because there was a bunch of deals, and then there was reports that Darvish will not be traded. You saw those tweets out there, and then boom, right at the deadline, it happens, and the Dodgers make the big move. Obviously, the Yankees made the big move for Sonny Gray. So I'll ask you this. Well, first, I mean, Darvish is probably, you think of all the moves that happened, Darvish is the biggest move, right?
The biggest move? It depends on how you define biggest. Is he the best player? Probably, but he's only there for, he's a rental. Yeah. So some would say guys who are going to be holding on for more than one season, Sonny Gray, could be technically bigger moves.
Yeah. I think it's a debate. Yeah, so he's the biggest player, but as George said, there's no guarantee that he'll be there after this year. So let's talk about the Sonny Gray move. We're both Yankees fans. I thought once the relievers came over in that trade, that was not the end of it. I think you were probably on the same page there. They weren't going to make one move without going out to get a starter. Some could argue that they needed two, but they end up getting the one. They did pay a pretty big price for it. Give me your thoughts from a baseball perspective first, and then we'll talk fantasy.
Well, my thoughts have always been the same. I think the Yankees made a mistake. Two mistakes, actually. Not so much with the players they received. The players make sense. You go back to the first trade. Frazier's a nothing. People think this trade was about Frazier. It wasn't about Frazier. Frazier sucked for Chicago. He'll suck with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Can't hit. I mean, he's batting 206 with Chicago. He's not going to hit any better in Yankee Stadium. Chicago's the best hitter's ballpark in the American League as far as all around. I think it's Fenway's got for right-handers, Yankee Stadium for left-handers, but Chicago's great for both sides. He couldn't hit there. You're not going to hit well in Yankee Stadium. It's not going to happen. But Conley and Robertson, obviously, they make your bullpen deeper. Yankees really just need to play a five-inning game, and the bullpen could take over from there. That's great if you can get to the playoffs. So that's what that was about. And the Yankees will have both guys, Robertson and Conley, for next season as well. Frazier will not be there. I didn't like the idea because I'll say it again. The Yankees are not a World Series team. They never were. Even with these deals, they're not. They're not better than Cleveland. They're not better than Houston when they get healthy. So I didn't understand these deals from that perspective where you give up all this talent. And the Yankees give up immense talent, you know, for guys, and you're still not a World Series team. You know, I wouldn't have done that in a million years. I like Sonny Gray. But he's not an ace. At best, he's a number two, and some people think he's a really slotted for an MLB number three star. That's what he's best at. But he could be a number two. So you give up Mateo, Caprellian, Fowler. I understand two of them are hurt, and maybe they don't come back to being what they were, but maybe they do. And if just one of them comes back to being the player they were, you got crushed here. Caprellian is what people expect to be an ace starter.
That was the biggest bummer for me in all this.
Right, so
you
I would
talk
that.
About James Caprellian more than we probably should on this show, but he has the ability to be an ace. And yeah, Tommy John surgery is a huge negative, but we've seen how many all-star pitchers have had Tommy John surgery. It's probably more than half at this point that have already had it. He's young, and you would be at risk of, if it ever happens again, then you'd be a big problem. But the Yankees taking a big risk here. Sonny Gray's going to have to be really good in order to come back. And look, you could say they're just prospects. They haven't done anything. I get it. But that was the guy I wanted to hold on to because I thought he'd be part of the rotation for in years to come.
The Yankees always want pitching, and yet they let it go in Caprellian. Yes. It was a strange move from them. Jaime Garcia is a nobody. I mean, if they think he's going to pitch well in Yankee Stadium, they're out of their minds. He got shelled last night. I understand the defense has been terrible the past couple of nights as well, but those hits are still hits. Garcia is not going to do well in Yankee Stadium. That'll be a train wreck waiting to happen. Listen, to my mind, you don't make these moves unless you're a World Series contender. And I understand the American League is not the strongest of the leagues, but you're not a World Series contender. Cleveland's going through you like a knife through warm butter here without a problem. All right, and I don't see that that's going to change anytime soon. I just wouldn't have made these deals. I would have worried about it in the offseason and kept what you had. Like I said, Fowler to me is probably not someone I'm afraid of losing. Mateo's an extra as well. But to give up Caprellian, when you keep crying over and over again about your pitching, for a guy, and I like Sonny Gray, but he's not an ace. If Caprellian would have gone, we're talking about Chris Sale, which obviously would have cost you more than what the Yankees give up, then I get it. But just for Gray, if I'm a Yankee fan, I would have done this. And once again, Sonny Gray, as far as fantasy is concerned, you have a better chance with W's now, but his ratios are going to take a hit too because you're not going to pitch in Oakland nice anymore, question. Right? Yep. Oakland, the ball doesn't travel in Oakland, and you got immense amount of foul territory in Oakland, which gives you extra outs. You don't have that in Yankee Stadium, so his numbers are going to go up as well. But you should have a better chance to get W's, assuming the Yankees ever figure out how to hit again.
And Sonny Gray does pitch to contact too, George, so it's not the best ballpark, especially if he's going up against a bunch of left-handed hitters. It's not the best ballpark.
He's a ground ball guy, though, so not be a problem.
Okay. So I'm in lockstep with you. I've really enjoyed this Yankee season. I didn't think I wanted to kind of hang on to everybody because I didn't think they had what it took to win the World Series. There's a lot of young players. They have a really good young core. If I'm playing devil's advocate, I'll say, well, we did give up some guys, but we kept five of the top six prospects. So they brought in a lot of pitching talent. And they kept five of their top six prospects. They did give up Caprelli. And I think what bothers me most about it is that Brian Cashman, George, as you, if you and I were giving Brian Cashman a historical report card, the thing he has struggled the most is to obtain pitching on the market. Not that any team is great at it, but Brian Cashman's got a lot of negatives next to him when it comes to acquiring free agent pitchers. So to have a homegrown guy leave is a head scratcher. So we'll hope for Sonny Gray. As you, George, said, you're going to take some ratio hits. So if you've enjoyed Sonny Gray to this point, I know my trading deadline is coming up here in the next couple of days. Some of yours may have already passed, but that being said, I don't know that you ditch him, but if you're really trying to hang on to ratios and or improve them, maybe you can get something back for Sonny Gray in a trade. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think Gray's going to be there with the Yankees. The Yankees do need pitching long-term. Pineda's gone, right? He's not going to be there. Sabathia's gone after this year. So Sonny Gray should be part of the Yankees' long-term plans. Yeah, Severino, Gray. I'm assuming Tanaka's not going to opt out. But if he has the next 2 months, if he's lights out, which, you know, last couple of starts he's been good, that can change in a big hurry as well. But I'm assuming he's not. Montgomery should be a number four. And I assume next year Chance Adams is your number five going in. You know, maybe
That's exactly the same thing. Yeah, I thought that's the rotation next year. It's Tanaka, Gray, Severino, Montgomery, Chance Adams.
I would assume that as well. The Yankees could always make a free agent addition. But one thing about Harold Steinbrenner, he wants to get under the salary cap, and he will be able to do that now. A-Rod's contract and Sabathia's contract come off the books after this year. That's more than enough to get him under. I don't know if the Yankees are going to make any big additions until possibly after 18 when Machado is free.
Yeah. So we'll see. They still have a good young core of players. I didn't think they were ready for prime time of playoffs, and that's why I wouldn't have made the moves, but so be it. Once they did make the relievers move, I knew they were going to make the starters move, so I wasn't even arguing against it. It just was a matter of who they were going to get rid of. So anyway, those are really the two of the bigger trades, obviously. At the trade deadline, what other moves do you feel like you saw over those last couple of days that were transformative or you think will really help teams? There's a bunch of relievers that got moved. It was pretty fast and furious there those last couple of days.
Oh, yeah. The relievers, we knew it was going to be. I actually was a little surprised the relievers weren't even worse, that they went even further. I mean, listen, we know what Quintana went. That wasn't a deadline deal, but Cubs getting Quintana was a great move by them. Same reason the Yankees got Gray. They needed starting pitching for more than just this season. So they thought it was worth getting rid of Eloy Jimenez. You know, the Red Sox getting Eduardo Nunez. All of a sudden, this guy looks like Ted Williams. Where'd this come from? He's hitting a ton down there for Boston, and it's allowed them to cover for Pedroia on being on a DL without a problem. What happens when Pedroia comes back? You know, if Rafael Devers is still hitting too, that should be interesting there. We saw Washington solve their bullpen issues, right? They got Doolittle, you got Mattson, you got Kinsler. They're fine now. Like I said, they're goods for them. Darvish, we already talked about there. I thought there were some losers too. I mean, you said former closers that got dealt a load of players. That's a lot of fantasy owners who lost saves. Granted, more saves are out there now. I mean, Brad Hand's now a closer. I've seen several other teams that have closer openings right now you can possibly grab. I have no idea what the Baltimore Orioles are doing. They have to know. No. If you're not willing to shell out $250 million for Machado, and that's the minimum it costs, $250 million to sign him in a year and a half, you have to trade him now. The longer you wait, the more his value goes down. So I have no – and they trade for Jeremy Hellickson. No idea what they're doing. I think Houston made a major mistake not trading for a starter. I think they've handled the role of favorite in the American League to Cleveland by not trading for a starter, because Keuchel doesn't look like the same pitcher right now. McCullers, you don't know when you're going to get him back, and history tells you he won't be the same anyway. Fierce, Peacock, Liriano, really? This is who you're going to war with, Charlie Morton? Good luck with that. Don't like the fact that Houston did that. And Detroit, they wanted to pare down that salary, but they wanted to trade Verlander, but have you eat the contract and give up them prospects. Doesn't happen. Miguel Cabrera doesn't look like the same player. Couldn't get rid of Kinsler. And J.D. Martinez, they traded away for a couple of nobodies. Not a good trading deadline for Detroit at all.
None of those guys were top 15 prospects for
Arizona,
the Diamondbacks. Yeah. All right, George and I will come back. We'll talk more MLB after this. There's a lot to cover. So back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. ominous sort of song to come back to, George. Like that Halloween horror movie music. But I don't know why we're previewing the Nationals that way, but that's who I wanted to talk about. Nationals take another win last night, 4-2. Daniel Murphy, two more homers, George. What's up with Daniel Murphy? Like, guy's just unbelievable. I don't know where this was during his career, but he's moved over to the Nationals, sitting 333. Those were his 18th and 19th homers of the year. He went 3-for-4 with three ribbies last night and two runs scored.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to troll a Met fan, that's a great way to do it, right? Just start bringing up Daniel Murphy and how they wouldn't pay him, but would pay Neil Walker. That'll make Met fans real happy. As he's turning, I mean, he's transformed himself. 2 years of Washington, he looks great. So good for him. He has power. He can hit, you know, he's hitting right behind Harper, in front of Harper. Just been a great all-around player, and his defense hasn't cost them yet. Maybe when the games get bigger, it will. But his defense is still poor. But it's, I guess, it hasn't been on display as much.
Right. So big game for Daniel Murphy there. But we talked a little bit about, before the break, Brandon Kinsler coming over from Minnesota to Washington. They've added three relievers in the last 2 weeks. And you think that they've effectively fixed their bullpen problems?
Well, I think they fixed it for the regular season. I mean, I might have trouble with Doolittle, you know, trying to get the last three outs of Game 7. You know, that could be a little tough. I assume it will still be Doolittle closing there. I guess they could. But
that was my next question.
Yeah, I assume it'll be
Doolittle. How do these roles set up?
They could mix and match with Kinsler. It won't be Mattson. Mattson apparently has stated that he's comfortable as a setup man. Doesn't want the job or doesn't care about the job. That's fine because that probably makes Baker's job a little easier in some ways. So how Andrew Miller makes everyone's job easier for Cleveland and with the Yankees. He's not someone who's going to bitch and moan about not closing. He'll do the seventh and eighth inning work. So that makes Terry Francona easier to just give the job to Chad, to Allen. Same thing here. I think you might see Kinsler if a bunch of righties are coming up. Maybe Doolittle was needed earlier, but I expect that it will be Doolittle. Like I said, I think their bullpen is straightened out as far as the regular season. I might have some issues as far as, you know, there's no Kenley Jansen's here, no Kimbrel's here, Chapman's here, but guys, you can pretty sure you're going to get the last three outs of a big game. That would be my only problem here.
So during that draft, you just reminded me of the Indians thing. Oh, going back to the Nationals a second, you reminded me of the Indians thing. I was doing that SiriusXM draft on Tuesday night, and then as soon as that draft ended, I turned on baseball, and it was the Sox-Indians four-hour marathon crazy game where Cody Allen, he gave up a home run to end that game that was a no-doubter. That was an unbelievable blown save.
Christian
by Cody
Vasquez.
Allen. Christian Vasquez, of all guys, he hit it a mile. It was a disastrous inning for Allen, and it had to be a rough night's sleep, if he got any sleep at all.
Yeah, that was, as a Yankee fan, that was a little disappointing. Always good for Boston to lose there. But, hey, I guess if you're going to give it up, you might as well give up a bomb. But, I mean, I think it was Vasquez. Does he have any home runs this season? I think he had one or two others, but I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it's crazy. But so back to the Nationals. So Doolittle does get the save last night. So we're expecting Mattson will be a straight setup, seventh inning guy, and then Kinsler the eighth and Doolittle the ninth. He expected to kind of work out that way for now. As long as Doolittle is racking up these saves, I guess they keep those roles as is for the time being. So from a fantasy standpoint, it's Doolittle, and you lose all those saves from Kinsler for now.
Yeah, I don't think Kinsler's going to have the job. He could get a smattering of saves here and there. I don't necessarily think it's absolutely going to be Kinsler in the seventh and Mattson in the eighth. Could be vice versa. But I think for the most part, Doolittle is safe. If I'm drafting one guy or I'm picking up one guy fast, all three guys are there, it'll be Doolittle.
Yeah. One quick personal note on the Cubs thing, because they beat the Cubs last night. Cubs are still six games over 500. One thing I would say is that I did my baseball weekend in Myrtle Beach, and the Myrtle Beach Pelicans are like the short A team for the Cubs. And I was talking with some staff members that were down there, and those guys were on that team. Eloy Jimenez and a couple of the others that got traded were on that team when they got traded, and they had to play for the team that was visiting the next night. So one of those awkward sort of situations where they're playing for their home team one night and the visiting team the next night. So just kind of a weird thing. And I was at a game where that happened once before back in 2004. right at the trade deadline, the Red Sox made that Doug Mankiewicz, Orlando Cabrera, big Nomar, big three-team trade. And I was in Minnesota. The only time I ever saw a game in the Metrodome, and Doug Mankiewicz played for the Red Sox on the Saturday night game that I went to. He got like a standing O because he played for the Twins on Friday, the Red Sox on Saturday. It's always kind of a weird, awkward situation when that happens. But Twins fans handled themselves well, and it won the Red Sox the World Series. So so be it. Anyway, storytelling time from me. So we talked – another thing about the Nationals that I wanted to focus on, because I read this article. It's a couple weeks ago now that I read it. On the Ringer, writer's name is Michael Bauman, and he wrote an article about Anthony Rendon, and it said Anthony Rendon is baseball's unknown superstar. And I think the crux of the article is that he's an extremely talented player, who's a very high draft pick, and would have been the number one overall draft pick back in 2009, I believe it was, but he was injured at the time, so he slid to the Nats at number six. The crux of the article is that his metrics are tremendous as far as his hitting ability is concerned. And because there's so many other storylines in Washington, namely Bryce Harper and how good Daniel Murphy is, we just spent a couple of minutes on him, that nobody talks about Anthony Rendon, certainly not to the level that they should. But here he is hitting .312, OPS of .991. Obviously, it's a really powerful lineup this year with Zimmerman being off the charts for a good portion of the season. But nobody seems to talk about Anthony Rendon. In the fantasy world, I guess we know about him because he produces. But do you feel the same way, that people just give him short shrift because of the lineup that he's in?
I didn't. No, I do think he's gotten short shrift because of the injuries he's had in the past. That's why he fell in fantasy leagues this year. I'm reading the article real quick now you sent to me. And I agree. Harper obviously is going to garner, you know, a majority of the publicity for that team. And then Murphy is probably number two coming over the Mets and doing what he did. So Rendon does sort of slip through the cracks. And you got Trey Turner as well when he's healthy. So it's another guy to, you know, that the media is wanting to talk to before they even get to Rendon. And people forget how good a player he was before he got hurt. Now he's healthy again, and he's raking. Anyway, you look at it, he's raking. I don't know if he's necessarily going to be he's certainly not going to be a first-round pick next year. But if he keeps this up, I mean, late second round, third round, he'd certainly have to be in consideration.
If you're in an on-base league, he's getting it done. .417 on base for Anthony Rendon, hitting .312, 21 homers, 71 RBIs, throwing 5 stolen bases. He's a tremendous player. You know, I remember a couple of years ago in a keeper league that I had, which I'm no longer a part of, Rendon was one of the guys that I kept, and unfortunately I had kept him into that one season where things fell apart due to injury and everything else. I think it probably jaded my perspective of him to some extent, but he was a 2011 first-round draft pick, by the way. I said 2009. But in any event, I just thought it was an interesting article. They talk about a lot of different metrics in there, and that, you know, to some extent they're saying that Rendon might be the best player on the team other than Bryce Harper. And, you know, considering the way Daniel Murphy hits, it's an interesting, you know, it's just sort of an interesting proposition to talk about, because maybe Anthony Rendon does get short shrift. But as you said, it might be more injury-related than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, he might. I mean, he could be the second best player on the team if you're counting defense, as Murphy's not that good at defense. But like, Trey Turner's going to have to be in this conversation as well. And what about Max Scherzer? I think I might put him ahead of him
sure.
as well. So, and bottom line is, Washington, pretty damn good team.
Dude, Adam Lind is hitting .305. It's like they got guys coming off the bench that are just, everybody's producing there. With all these moves that they've made, where do you – it's just them and the Dodgers? Do you expect anybody else to be there in the end?
Well, I mean, listen, the Cubs are obviously – I still think they'll have something to say, make some noise. Are they going to be a threat with the pitching staff? I don't know if it's good enough to compete with the Dodgers. I mean, Dodgers, if you Darvish is going to be this good and Kershaw comes back, I understand it's a lot of ifs. But you think about it. Yeah, Kershaw, Darvish, Wood, Hill, good luck. You know, that won't be any fun. And, you know, Washington got the same question marks. So Scherzer, I think he'll be fine with the neck, not worried about it. But, you know, Strasburg, I forget who tweeted. I think it was Matt Modica actually had the greatest tweet. You know, summer's after Strasburg finally got hurt. Now you know it's summer. Strasburg's on the DL. There's truth to that because it happens every year. Anybody else in the National League? Brewers, no. Diamondbacks, no. Good season for them, but no. Colorado, no. So I don't see that happening. So to answer your question, yeah, I think it is the Dodgers and pretty much the Nationals, and I'd have to give the edge to the Dodgers.
What do you think about what the Pirates did at the deadline? I know they got rid of Tony Watson. I didn't see any other major moves from them. Do you think those were mistakes?
Well, we also there was no market for position players, right? You already stated what the Tigers got for J.D. Martinez, and that pretty much told you there's just no market for it. You know, teams didn't need it, and they weren't trading anything for it. So I understand McCutchen still being there. I would have liked to have seen the Dodgers probably market Gerrit Cole. Cole had just, probably over the past month, has started to look like Gerrit Cole. Now, maybe it was too late because it took him so long. Maybe they got, you know, they couldn't get the value up there for him, and they'll wait till the offseason. But I would have liked to have seen them market Gerrit Cole, see what they could have gotten for him. But like I said, they might be able to do that during the offseason. It just may have been too little, too late to get rid of Gerrit Cole. But no, I didn't like what the Pirates didn't do.
Yeah, a couple of teams missed the boat. You know, Pirates, Orioles, Mets to some extent, I believe as well. I think people feel like the Mets just didn't do what they needed
Shocking.
To do in jettisoning more players. But it is what it is. It's an odd thing with the Gerrit Cole thing because we always talk about building with pitching, but that's a team that needs to get rid of a pitcher in order to get more pieces back and keep turning it over. But you're right. I think the lack of market for position players kind of hurt people with McCutchen. Just enjoy. If you're a McCutchen owner, just enjoy it. It's elite McCutchen again. Right, George?
Absolutely. He looks great. He's had a revival since going to center field. Even Marte's comes back. McCutchen stays in center because he's played so well there.
Yeah. We're back. We're going to turn the page back over to football. It's Mike and George for the next 20 minutes on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I kind of like this music, George. It's like the Barney Miller theme song to date myself.
I didn't like Barney Miller.
Why not?
It's too slow for me. Hal Linden. It was just too slow. I was more of a Starsky and Hutch guy, a little SWAT.
I mean, I didn't watch Barney Miller because I was, as a seven-year-old, I was really interested in the drama of a detective of a police station. I watched it because my parents probably had it on. But in any event, that is a very dated reference, and nobody under 39 gets that. But it is what it is. Barney Miller was a 70s TV show about, is it New York City police officers, detectives? Is that what
I didn't watch it. I would assume, but it was a comedy.
It was a comedy, so it was like a comedic bent on police detectives. It was like probably on the same time as WKRP in Cincinnati and
that I watched.
The Mary Tyler Moore shows and
didn't watch
Starsky
that.
And Hutch, all that kind
watch
of stuff.
Watch that.
Were embroiled in your 70s TV station. Really, honestly, you watched everything that was on because you only had three channels back in the day. But in anyway, if you know who Abe Vigoda is and all the constant rumors about his demise on the internet, then he was on that show. In any event, I want to talk about a little bit of a new segment we're going to do here. I'll probably put George on the spot each and every week. It's called What Happens If? And I'm going to set up some scenarios that may very well happen and may play out as we go through the season. We talked actually about one of these already, but it's okay because I want to find out what happens if George, Jay Ajayi, does get hurt, if he's missing major time. We have a couple of backs behind him in Damian Williams and Kenyon Drake. It's complicated now with the Ryan Tannehill injury, but I'll ask you what happens this season if Jay Ajayi gets hurt.
Miami starts looking forward to a top 10 pick next year. I mean, Ajayi, and I don't think Ajayi is great either, mind you, but he's the best of what they have. You look at his, as far as fantasy is concerned, we keep talking about him. He had four good games last year. You know, two against Buffalo, one against Pittsburgh, and he had one other decent game. I can't remember who it was against. But other than that, that's all he did. Yeah, it wasn't like he was a great overall performer here. Already got the concussion. There's no one else there. I mean, we mentioned about handcuffs. We briefly talked about handcuffs earlier, and I'm not a big believer in handcuffs, not in this day and age. I used to be, but in this day and age now, I just feel you got to get the next best running back that can give you value that week. There aren't enough running backs to go around, so I'm not grabbing running back 36 as a handcuff if the running back I have ranked at 22 is still available. I'm grabbing 22, even if they assume they're both not starters. I think it's an easy choice for me there. That's why I have one ranked higher than the other. Damian Williams is nothing special. Kenyon Drake probably would see Drake, I think, would actually get a lot more playing time because they would need a change of pace back. Someone could possibly be explosive out of the backfield. But this would be a very bad situation, as I don't like anybody after Ajayi.
Yeah, so in the Scott Fishbowl League, which is an industry league that George and I both competed again in, we're in different divisions. It's a really deep team. I think there's 22 rounds overall. And in my last two picks, since you're really digging for oil at that point, I picked up Damian Williams and Kenyon Drake as my last two picks. I figured
digging for oil. You're thinking of a change kind of at that point.
What's that? Yeah, no kidding. Anything. It's a bad analogy, but nonetheless, I just figured, well, what if JHI goes down? I'll stack with these two running backs. I may very well jettison these guys during the year, but nonetheless, that was a what happens if. I actually do think there could be, with the way Miami has addressed the offensive line, I know they've changed over some guys, and Laremy Tunsil gets into the mix there. Probably at left tackle. So I will say that I think there's some potential there for Damian Williams. If Ajayi is out for long term, if he misses some games, I think he got some possibilities there with Damian Williams being the back. As you said, Kenyon Drake will probably see a more regular role in your PPR leagues. I see him catching passes out of the backfield, but if there's going to be two or three or four games missed by Ajayi, I kind of like Williams in that role. I think he's a really deep flyer. I think it's got to be a deep league. I think in 16-team leagues, unless you're dedicated to a handcuff, you don't necessarily need to pick him. But if you're taking flyers late and guys that you're likely going to cut, I don't mind Damian Williams in that 14th round or so. Does that make sense, George?
Oh, I'm good with it. I mean, once again, okay. Round 14, we're all taking you're taking dartboard throws. Yeah, you know, in most standard leagues, you can move on. The Scott Fishbowl is completely different. You know, he said there's 22 rounds. There's nothing left. You know, right now, I think there's a waiver run. I go, I'm one of those guys who had Kenneth Dixon, so I got to replace Dixon as a waiver run before the season starts, and I'll move on. I'll try and find somebody there. But in most standard leagues, you have 16 rounds. There could be some fines on the waiver wire there, so you'll be okay. But in this league, good luck.
So let's pivot to that next question since you mentioned Kenneth Dixon. This is a what happens if one of the Baltimore running backs goes down, and one of them did. And the thought process on Dixon is that he's going to be out for how long, George? What's the update?
Season, right? He's done. He'll be put on IR, so I don't think he's coming back. Don't think you can rely on him whatsoever. So you look at Terrence West. West, I don't think Woodhead, his value doesn't change much at all. He's the pass catcher out of the backfield. They'll do what they're going to do with him. Baltimore's been a snake-bitten team. In training camp. My God, they have guys going down every day, right?
This is like two of the last 3 years this has happened to them.
Yeah, I have an exorcism or something like that because something's just wrong here. But Dixon's out. Terrence West, I think, is interesting. I moved him up to RB3 status here. I'm not in love with him, but I'll say it again. Every starting running back has value in fantasy. There just aren't enough to go around here. Woodhead is I'm nowhere near on board like everybody else is on Woodhead, mainly because of health. This guy who's played, he's missed 27 of the last 48 games? You want to try me? You're going to tell me he's going to stay healthy this year? Not seeing it.
I'm with you on this. I don't love Terrence West as a player, and some metrics don't really look favorably upon him, but this is almost a similar conversation to the Jaquizz Rogers conversation that you and I have had, because I'm not going to sign up for Jaquizz Rogers in any given year being a great player. And we've seen him play in the past. He's good in fits and starts. It's not consistent. He's really good out of the backfield catching passes. And at one point, that was his only role when he was in Atlanta. But now, Doug Martin's out for a month. I need somebody that's going to play for a while. And Terrence West is going to play more than we expected him to over the course of this season. Obviously, health, assuming that he stays healthy. But that's where I'm at, right? His value has to come up simply due to opportunities. We talk about it every single summer. Opportunities are what we are after in the fantasy world.
Of course. And it happens all the time. That's why there'll be somebody in week two, week three, you know, someone comes out of nowhere that we didn't see getting a starting job for one reason or another. And those are the hot waiver wire guys that we'll all be going after.
Yep, absolutely. Moving on to the next team that I wanted to talk about. And it's the Indianapolis Colts. The guy has, for 11 straight seasons, Frank Gore has more than 1,200 yards from scrimmage. I read that yesterday. Tremendous consistency. A player that for the last couple of seasons, fantasy owners and drafters have been off, and he slid down draft boards. But here he is, George, despite his advanced age, Frank Gore is a starting running back in this league. Indianapolis does have other questions as well, obviously. But what were to happen, say Andrew Luck is back and healthy, what would happen if Frank Gore goes down? How do you see the roles behind him splitting up?
Well, that's obviously the most important thing, though. If Luck is healthy and playing, because if he's not, I'm not touching this team. Right now I have Gore as a running back three. So I like Gore. No problem drafting. I think he'll be fine. If he were to go down, though, I mean, we're not hearing the greatest reports about Marlon Mack, the rookie they drafted this year. Just doesn't look all that great. I mean, Turbin, Ferguson, ugh. There's no one special. What comes out, this is sort of like Miami again. There's just no one special there. You know, so, you know, maybe Mack picks it up. He's still got a month to, you know, his training camp has just started. Maybe he picks it up. I think if I had to bet, Mack is probably the guy I want to go with because once, you know, they drafted this guy, right? So unless they hate him, he's just totally terrible, they tend to give the rookie the chance here, the new toy, rather than the old vets who they know that haven't done anything in the past, probably not going to do anything in the future either. I don't hold much hope for Turbin or Ferguson. I think Marlon Mack is the guy you'd want there, but I say this with no degree of confidence because, once again, this offensive line's terrible, right? It's not very good. Luck sort of masks some of those problems because he's such a good quarterback, get rid of the ball, find those receivers. I don't know if anybody succeeds. If Luck would ever go down here. But even with Luck healthy, you know, they still have their issues. Gore, being the veteran, I think knows how to find those holes that maybe other backs can't find. So I think there'd be some problems here if Gore went down.
Yeah, and to stay on the Colts there, I mean, Andrew Luck, obviously, the news has been bad for a while now. If he can't come back and be effective, this team is going to be a bottom-of-the-barrel team with Scott Tolzien starting, correct?
What happened last time when they lost their starting quarterback when Manning went down? Number one overall pick? I don't know if they'll be that big because I think the Jets have that all to themselves. But not good if Luck can't play. But as you said, I expect Luck to play. But I've dropped them in my rankings because I don't know. It's just too much smoke there. Too much smoke there as well.
I say the Jets in Vegas are a 4.5 over-under total
under
in the season.
Under.
Yeah. All day, right? All day.
I might take the under if there was 2.5.
Look, it is funny because you start to hear things. You're like, ah, you know what? The defense has talent, and they're not gonna mail it in. They're not gonna tank. That's right. The players aren't gonna tank. But what the Jets have done is follow the NBA format and basically what the Browns did last year. It's like, we're gonna leave this offense so bereft of talent that they're not gonna have the ability to be in front of teams all season long.
Look at the Jets' schedule. Give me 2 wins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, you and I played this game, right? Or it was I played it with somebody. Want to give a win at Cleveland in week 5? I can't even give you that. But if you want to give that, okay. You know, other than that, Buffalo, Oakland, Miami, Jacksonville's improved. Cleveland, we said. New England, Miami, Atlanta, Buffalo, Tampa, Carolina, KC, Denver, New Orleans, Chargers, New England. Where are these wins coming from?
They're not getting 5. I do a pool with a couple of friends every year where we draft 5 teams, do the over-under totals. Jets are going to be the first pick off the board. So whoever gets the first pick is going to walk out, guaranteed. They can't get 5 wins. No way. So Mike and George to close out the show after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be back. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening today. You can always catch the show on demand if you want to re-listen to some of the things. We talked football today. We talked a lot about the MLB trade deadline. So, and George did a nice job of putting in a fantasy perspective. Brandon Kinsler, Yu Darvish, Sonny Gray, etc. So feel free to listen to that. I will preview the shows coming up, and that's college football today. That's Joe Lisi and Rich Germanello. Those guys do a great job on previewing college football season. They do a really good job with interviews and the like. I don't know which conference they're going over today, but feel free to listen in if you're a college football fan or a fan in general of sports. So the weekend fantasy update will be after that. So those guys are 10 to 12. The weekend fantasy update will be 12 to 2. That's Joe Galina, Frank Stanfill, Mike Florio, and then after that from 2 to 3, you'll have the Father and Son Fantasy NASCAR Hour with Scott and Sean Engel. They'll take you around the world of NASCAR, put it into fantasy terms and the like. So creeping closer and closer, George, you got any drafts coming up this week?
I think Joe PCP and I are doing one that we're going to play out on Tuesday night during Fantasy Black Book. Other than that, this week, no. I think mine start in earnest more the week after.
Sounds good. So listen into that. The Fantasy Black Book is on every Tuesday night from 8 to 10. Is that accurate?
Not 9 to 11. 9 to 11.
9 to 11. 9 to 11. Okay. And then you pass it over to Tony Cicada, who's doing. Tony Cicada is, he's realized his.
He's out of his mind.
He is out of his mind, but he has always been out of his mind. But
yeah, that's
Tony
not breaking news.
Always visualized himself as a late night talk show host, and you know, he's gets the wacky people in there. I hosted a late night show with him on our previous stop on Sirius XM, and we got some weird callers. And that's perfect for Tony. He likes that stuff, and he does a great job of it. He's, you know, George and I have worked with him many, many times. He's doing a great job there. So it gives you a sense of some of the changes and some of the new places where you can find George, myself, and all the other shows on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And please download the app at FNTSY Radio on iTunes Store or on Google Play. So, George, I'll wrap it up with saying that I'm excited for football season. I'm excited that the camps are back. I'm excited to be doing drafts, and I got a few more coming up, and this is kind of the place where people can come every Saturday and Sunday morning in order to get their information, the latest information on how their drafts are going. But we expect the questions to start coming in fast and furious here in the next week or so.
Yeah, I think it's going to start to pick up. I said my draft start to pick up in earnest this, the week of the 14th. I would assume everybody else's do as well, especially as the month goes on. We get closer to draft day. Lord knows I am one of those guys who likes to draft as close to that opening Thursday night game as I possibly can. If I could draft right before kickoff, I would.
I do as well. I try to push them back, but some of these experts' drafts, they get pushed up, so you know, people, listeners, can have a good time with them and debate some of the strategies of the experts. It puts us in a tougher position at times. Look at the Scott Fishbowl thing. T.Y. Hilton was my first wide receiver off the board. Now I don't even know what's going to happen with Andrew Luck, so that's not going to be great. And obviously, if it were a few weeks from now, I'd have a better sense of where Andrew Luck sits from a health perspective.
I got the same issue. I think I also have Ty Hilton in that league, and I took him first receiver off the board, so I'm hoping for a safe return for Andrew Luck as well.
So how about players? Well, we only got a minute to go, but give me a player that you've seen a status update maybe recently in camp that has surprised you to a positive extent. Like, you've heard the reports and you're like, you know what, I might move that guy up a little bit.
I'll probably move the negative sort. I moved guys down because of the injuries more than guys I moved up. So guys have moved up because of that. Sure. Like I said, Jay's moved down, so everybody else moves up. Murray, Howard, Freeman McCoy were already ahead of him. So that's what happens there to me. Luck, I've moved down, so other quarterbacks have moved up. Really, nothing's really changed. Staying away from quarterbacks, staying away from tight ends, loading up on running backs and wide receivers.
I probably wasn't going to have Andrew Luck anyway because I'm not drafting a quarterback that early. So in that sense, I'm not bothered by it. But thanks for listening, folks. Catch us on demand. Listen to the next show. The College Football Today guys are coming up on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll talk to you tomorrow, same time at 8 o'clock.